the way to the top. Get that coffee hot. It's a chilly morning as we broadcast live from Prescott, Arizona. And we're joined in the 8 o'clock hour of the Rosie on the House weekly radio broadcast this week with John Eisenhower talking trees. And, John, this is our second broadcast from Prescott in, I think, 3 months.
And I like it. I want to do it more often.
We need to figure out how to be up here all the time.
Yeah, it really is beautiful. Yeah, it's nice. Speaking of cold, too, I didn't bring a jacket. Wouldn't you know it? Just jumped in my car yesterday afternoon, needing to beat the traffic out of Phoenix. Didn't bring a jacket.
Oops.
Yeah, it was cold last night. 27 degrees.
We walked from the palace back to Marriott Suites, and about two or three doors out of it, he's like, "Is there a thrift store around here?"
And actually,
I was trying to not be rude.
Too bad.
I was trying to walk with you, but I was trying to not leave Kim and Jennifer behind, so I could tell you were cold because you were in a hurry to get there.
It was a good time last night. I love it up here, looking out across the courtyard here at the Prescott Courthouse and these beautiful deciduous trees. All their leaves are off. We want to talk a little bit about trees today.
And Can you identify those trees without any leaves on them?
Yes, sir. I know those trees by like the back of my hand. Those are American elms, actually. They're elms that escaped the Dutch elm disease. They're one of a few here in America that didn't succumb to a very wicked disease pathogen that traveled all through the Midwest and the East and wiped out most of the elm trees. But these are some beautiful elms. They're one of the nicest stands here in the state of Arizona and worth coming up and seeing any time of year. But it's especially nice at the winter season right now with the leaves off. You can see that branch architecture, and it's just nice to see mature trees in Arizona. I just, being from Phoenix, we don't get to see quite as many large mature trees, and it's beautiful.
Well, not a large mature tree can mean something different in the desert than it does where elms are deciduous or native, I should say.
That's right, and these are nice and tall.
Or the live southern oaks of Louisiana.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I've got a picture of myself near one in Virginia that's my daughter took it. You can hardly see me. I'm sitting at the base of the tree with my hand up against it. But the tree is so sprawling. She couldn't even fit the whole thing into the frame of the photo. Beautiful big old trees out there. Yeah, it's nice to sit under and enjoy the shade of these beautiful trees all year long. And yeah, we've got a lot to talk about today. We want to talk
about your tree of the month. You were talking about being in Prescott more often, or we were, but there's not citrus in Prescott.
No, citrus are a little, they're a lowlander. They really do enjoy a lot more temperate climates. They like warmer temperatures. They thrive in the Phoenix area and all the low desert communities around the state of Arizona. And people try to plant them. You know, you can grow them in pots and in containers that you can bring indoors if you live up in this area. And if you've got a nice hand truck, you can put a pretty good sized little fruit tree. You can buy dwarf varieties of lemon or tangerine or orange and grow them in a small container, and then just bring them inside, bring them into the garage even, maybe enough to get them through. You just got to keep them above about 28 degrees. Lemons and limes are our most susceptible trees to frost damage. Anything under 28 degrees usually will cause at least some leaf damage. Other citrus trees are a little more frost hardy. You got to be down into the mid-20s and lower to hurt some of those trees. And again, it's all about the duration of the freeze. If we only dip down there for an hour or two one night, it's not going to be as bad as if we had an 8 or a 10-hour, you know, persistent frost over one night, or worse than that, two or three days of incredibly, you know, low temperatures night after night after night. And that'll eventually really put a threat to our citrus farmers around the state.
So, some of the varieties of citrus.
Well, you know,
there's your typical grapefruit, orange, lemon, lime that people think about, but that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, there's some wonderful variety of fruits. We've got some really exotic varieties like your pomelo, your tangerines, your mandarins. They have about 10 different types of navel oranges even. They've got lots of your Arizona sweets and your Valencia oranges, which are your juice oranges, which are real popular. You see them all over, easy to grow. But they've got some interesting other types of fruits. There's what are called kumquats. They're really not a citrus, but they're a citrus-like fruit. Are real interesting. They're easy to grow as well, and they're more of an ornamental. Some people don't like to eat them, but you can eat them as well. There's another interesting fruit called a calamondin, and the calamondin is a hybrid between a citrus and a kumquat, and they're kind of like a small little tangerine, also edible, but just beautiful ornamental trees. What I like about citrus is it gives you a little return on your investment. If you're going to be planting a tree and it's going to be taking up space in the yard, one, they're a beautiful tree in terms of just their overall size because you can fit them just about in any spot in a yard. And then the fact that they can bring you something back on your investment is pretty cool. I like that. I'm looking at that. What do you got there?
This is my orange off of my tree. I picked it yesterday for the write-up.
Let me see that.
Can you name the orange?
Yes, I can. That's a navel orange. If you turn it over on the bottom, you can see the little...
Looks like a belly button.
See a little belly button on the bottom there. Those are such nice fruits because the navel oranges produce fewer fruits on the tree, but they tend to be larger, and they're usually seedless and really easy to peel. And it's a really nice fruit for just eating off the table.
I'm really excited to finally have the citrus because you can't plant it and start producing. If you buy a 5-year-old one, okay, that's a different story. But it takes a few years of new growth. And we planted them. We had a freeze after 2 years. So then it started all over because we had to trim it all back down and wait for new growth. And we're finally getting produce from our citrus. And I have just been waiting for pure orange juice. You go to the store and they get like the pulp free. I'm like, that's not orange juice. That's like, that's not orange juice. I mean, we had citrus growing up in mom and dad's backyard and we squeeze it and we didn't add anything. We didn't, you just had your squeezer and you had your cup underneath it and you'd get
lots of pulp and lots of little,
all the different character and flavor to it.
Yeah, we have quite a few citrus. In fact, right now our Mexican lime tree is just producing tons and tons of limes. It's getting toward the end of the harvest, but we put out a big old bag out in the front of the house with a sign on it, free Mexican limes, and people come by and grab handfuls, and it's nice to, you know, get those out. If you've got lots of citrus in your yard and don't know how to get rid of it, you know, it's nice to put out a few bags, take them to work, take them to school, wherever you are, and try to get them out to people so it just doesn't go to waste, because a lot of us have fruit trees that there's no way we could consume all that fruit. We do quite a bit of juicing. We'll juice all the limes and we'll put them in little ice cube trays, freeze them, and then empty the ice cube trays into a Ziploc bag. And then we've got a little cubes of lime juice we can pop in a blender with some other juices and make a little limeade in the summer when we turn the corner into the new year. Lots of good ways to preserve that.
That's a great thing to do with lemons as well. If you like a little bit of lemon in your iced tea, that's a great way to add it.
Yeah, great. Good thought. Yeah, we have
But don't fill up... You, like this glass of water you have now, you've got all those ice cubes of ice... Don't do that with lemons. You won't get any tea. All you'll taste is just a lemon. You just do like a drop or two of lemon, and then the rest your regular water with your iced tea.
That's why it's nice to even pop them in a little blender and smooth them, you know, distribute it evenly through the whole drink.
I'm gonna have to add that trick to our.
You know, some folks we know take the lemon and they'll put it with apple juice, and it makes a really great drink.
Lemon and apple.
Yeah. You can use a lot less apple juice, so less sugar. Put in some water with it, a little lime juice or a lemon cube, and you've got a nice little smoothie. But it's a nice drink, a cool, refreshing drink, but less sugar than pure apple juice.
Well, I'll have to try that because our Anna apples have trees have started to produce, so I'll have to add that to our our, I'll freeze some lemon and add that to our spring. It's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also text in to 411-923. That's it. Just six numbers, 411-923. You get 120 characteristics. Please add name and town, especially as it relates to planting. Your town elevation is a huge factor in the advice given. So please include that information so we can get a proper answer to you. You wanted to talk a lot today about soil conditions as well.
We do. You know that there's a lot going on underground during the winter. We don't like to do a whole lot of pruning. We talked a little bit about that last time on the air, that we just want to reduce our pruning this time of year. Just start reducing the dosage of pruning. Be very careful, a little more judicious because of the risk of frost, which we can talk about a little bit later. But what's going on underground is an amazing thing, that even after the shoot growth stops above ground with our evergreens and our deciduous, but especially our deciduous trees that go into a full dormancy, when the shoots are dormant, the roots are not. Their soil temperatures underground remain pretty modified. You know, they're not changing as drastically as the above ground temperatures. You know, the soil is insulated for the most part. And roots, the research shows, continue to be quite active during the winter months, for even months deep into the winter. Unless the ground is actually frozen, that root activity continues. If you think about this, in the fall, the sap starts dropping in the tree. And as the trees go into dormancy, that sap is flowing down for storage in the roots and in the main trunk and areas of the tree that store those starches and sugars. And it really produces additional root development. The roots continue to colonize. They continue to metabolize in the soil. They're colonizing new areas of soil, mineral uptake, water uptake. They're getting ready for the big spring push, you know, of new growth. This is why the research has shown, too, that fertilizing in the fall is probably your best time, if you do an annual fertilization, to fertilize then, because the plants are using the stored nutrients from the fall fertilization for the big spring push of growth.
And we'll pick up right after this.
Okay.
RosieOnTheHouse.com.
John, I hate interruptions, and I apologize. I interrupted you, but there's a few things I can't control, and that's the clock, especially when it's a paid commercial break. But that helps keep us on the air. So
right.
You were right in the middle of talking about the importance of the root structure during the winter, as it's the tree's time to prepare itself for a good growth in the summer. And if you want to help your trees grow in the summer, now's the important time to tend to them.
Well, it's a little bit too late to be putting any fertilizer down, but we have encouraged for fall fertilizing to our customers over the last several years. And
so when would you have done your fall fertilizing?
Anytime if September 1st to about November 15th. You know, really kind of as the soil temperatures are dropping right now, there's not a lot of not a lot of fertilizer uptake. So we wanted to be a little careful not to be putting fertilizer down too late into the year. But I wanted to talk about the root activity because it's really critical. If we understand that even though the above ground parts of the trees are slowing down, but the roots are continuing to metabolize, it's a great time to do some soil conditioning. We often will put down some compost, some gypsum, some other soil amendments into the soil, getting ready for the spring push. We have several of our customers who have old citrus trees that have broken down tree wells. A few of them have small orchards. And what we've done is improve the tree wells, maybe move them out a little bit further, and then put down a small layer of compost, finished compost, some soil sulfur and gypsum, work that into the soil. And it just makes a better rooting environment, a better growth environment. All these things, adding any kind of organic matter to the soil is a is a is helping to feed the soil and improving our heavy clay soils, which are sometimes difficult for plants to survive in. We like to think of it as soil amendments as opposed to fertilizer. Fertilizer is actually putting down a minerals, nutrients for the tree, kind of like we take supplements and vitamins in a sense. But I like to look at soil amendments like soil sulfur, gypsum, even compost, organic matter that you're just working into the soil, kind of like as us having a good diet. You know, we often have to get medicines or maybe an injection occasionally when we have an acute problem with our physical health. In the same way, trees might occasionally need fertilizer if you're actually trying to address a micro or macronutrient deficiency. But I like to think of soil amendments as just the ability to keep the soil structure good, keep a good, healthy environment for those roots to do as well as they can. The problem with us is we're constantly raking up our leaf litter and throwing it away, you know, raking it up and chucking it in the trash can. We're breaking up that natural nitrogen cycling. What we like to do is put that back into the soil. Sometimes if you can't leave the leaves because the leaves tend to just want to blow around your yard and end up in the pool and other places, it's understandable that you have to rake them up and get rid of them. If you do have the situation in your yard where you can leave the leaf litter in place, we highly recommend that. It's good. It's an insulation. It reduces the loss of water through evapotranspiration. It provides a little insulation from the summer heat. It's so good for the root zone to keep those leaves in place. If you can't leave the leaves in place for whatever reason, then why not compost the leaves and then bring them back in the form of a finished compost and lay them over the soil surface? That compost won't blow away like the leaves, but it'll be returning back to the trees the nutrient value that was lost when you raked the leaves up and took them away in the first place. Which brings us to the next topic, which is composting. This is a great time of year. We've got a couple mulberry trees and several other deciduous trees in our...
Lots of leaf drop there.
A lot of leaf drop. They're coming down right now, and it's looking beautiful. It's our time to rake those leaves up and get them into a suitable...
You just told me to leave them there.
I know. If you can't leave them there, like we can,
okay.
they tend to blow all over our yard, end up in our pool.
And then probably your neighbor.
We have one on both sides of our pool. It's a double whammy, and there's no way. They just
but
blow
in. I bet in the summer that keeps your water temperature nice.
Oh, yeah, it's
cool.
Nice. That's why we let that one volunteer mulberry grow up on the west side of our tree, our pool, because it provides beautiful shade.
So you can't leave the leaves there.
No,
obviously, you can't leave them in the pool.
We have a couple of big horse troughs that somebody left on the side of the road for the city pickup, and we picked them up and took them and punched some more holes in the bottom of them because they were all rusted out on the bottom, but to allow it to drain nicely. And then we use those horse troughs. They're galvanized, so the sides of them are nice. The steel bottoms just eventually went out. So we put our leaves in there. The recipe is very simple. Put in 50% brown dried leaves, 50% green material, add water, and stir. And you'll have compost in no time at all. Within about 60 days, you'll have some finished compost in Arizona.
Keep Rosie on the House the number one referral directory in the state by voting at rosieonthehouse.com or Ranking Arizona.
Hey, Dad.
It is beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Sun just came up over the courthouse.
Which is going to make it a little difficult to see the information we have. I know you have a lot more for soil amendments and developing, but we are here for you, the Arizona homeowner, the listeners, and we've got a number of texts that have come in, along with calls that we're fielding at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. If you'd like to get on the air and tap into the arborist mind of John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service, that's 1-888-767-4348, or text in 411-923. Now, I'm going to kind of jump ahead because this ties into a little bit of what we were talking about with the with the fall. And so with all this growth development that is happening beneath the soil and the root structure, what do you do for watering? And that's Mary's question in Tucson. She texted in, how often do I water a mature China berry and African sumac during the winter?
It's a good question. We've got a lot of, those are two trees that are relatively thirsty trees. They're larger trees. They're not desert, they're desert adapted, but they're not desert trees. So you're going to need to give them a little bit more than just your relying upon your seasonal rains. Of course, in the summer, you know, we have to, you know, ramp up the water quite a bit. In the winter, you can back off, you know, to more of a once every 10-day, two-week cycle. Sometimes even 3 or 4 weeks is fine on some trees. But you want to make sure that you have watered deeply at least once or twice during the winter season. Between now and the first of the year, a good deep soaking, between now and, say, the first of February, you probably need to water at least once a month and do it to a to the full depth of the root zone, which is generally on a mature tree like a China berry or a sumac would be about 3 feet of soil depth. And that might require using a soaker hose. That's, I think, one of the best ways to get, you know, water distributed without you having to move the hose every, you know, half hour, 45 minutes, and then forget it and have it flood one area of the yard unnecessarily. But a good soaker hose around your trees is a good way to distribute the water evenly, and you can just put the hose on, leave it on overnight, and then put the soaker hose away and come back and do the same a month later.
Now, I have heard that on a deciduous tree, when it loses all its leaves, you're not doing it any good by watering it. In fact, you could be actually harming it. Is that...
No, it's really not true. Not especially in our temperate climate here. We don't have a real, you know, true dormancy where we have a, we have frozen soils here. No, they would, all trees, you know, contrary to some popular belief, require winter watering. And if we've had some good seasonal rains, which we have recently, it may not be as critical. There have been some very dry winters we've had, and people have shut their water off at the end of the summer and thought they could go for 4 months without watering their trees, to find out that midway through the winter, the trees are starting to look pretty poor. So no, trees do need not as much water, but they definitely do need some deep watering from time to time.
And then this gentleman wants to know, when is the best time to trim ironwood and Palo Verde trees? You had said earlier, this isn't really our trimming time.
You know, I would wait until spring to do those. Sometime after the end of February would be your target time. Call, you know, sometime in February to get on the busy pruning schedule. Most tree services really start to increase their workload starting right after the 1st of March. So, you know, call in February and let us know how we can help you.
Let's bring John into the conversation, calling in from Sorita, to talk to John Eisenhower. He's got a question on our tree of the month is navel orange. Now, the navel orange isn't our tree of the month. It's citrus in general, but he's got some citrus questions, so we'll see how we can help John. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm glad I got a hold of you guys. I have what I believe is it's a navel orange. I think it's a Valencia. It's about 8 years old, and every year now it blossoms profusely. I get all kinds of blossoms, and once it's done blossoming, you know, I'm left with those teeny tiny pinhead fruit after the blossoms, and they seem to all fall off after a time, and I'm lucky if I get six mature oranges by the end of the year. I'm just picking them now, and I see I have five or six hidden inside the tree, but that's it. I don't get any production out of the thing. Am I doing something wrong?
Now, he's in Sonoyta, so we're probably talking 3,500 feet elevation.
Well, right, what is Sahorita, but it's about same elevation, I think.
Sorita, okay.
Sahorita,
so north of Green Valley.
And how old is the tree?
Oh, it's about 8 years old now.
Okay, that's still a pretty relatively young tree. You know, I would just try to improve the soil conditions. You might want to work a little compost into the soil around the tree. Make sure that you're watering deeply out to the drip line and beyond to try to encourage root growth out into the native soil beyond where the roots are now. you always want to put water beyond where the root development is, so that it will encourage that root development into to colonize new soil, which will really help the fruit production. And be sure you fertilize on a regular basis. We recommend a 3 or 4 times a year fertilizing schedule. We like February, August, and October are good months. February, May, August, and October on a four-time-a-year cycle. But there a little bit of fruit cast is pretty common, the loss of some of those little fruits before they fully set. And that's a tree's natural, a thinning process, because a tree can only support so much fruit. Trees have energy reserves, which can only support a certain amount of fruit, and they will just drop fruit that they can't support, and that's a natural process. It's unfortunate you're losing so much, but just do the best you can to improve the overall growing conditions, and you should have increasing harvests in the next few years.
And another thing, that climate he's in, it is a little chillier. They're going to get more mm-hmm. chill hours. Talk about the proper way to blanket.
Before we go on to that, I wanted to say one more thing. There are often conditions right when the bloom is setting, and when the fruit is setting, that a wind event, rain event, any kind of weather event can sometimes knock the bloom off and actually prevent the fruit from fully setting. So
a benefit to citrus is you don't need a pollinator. Pistachio, you need mm-hmm. a male and a female tree, and you need the bees to cross-pollinate for your harvest. Citrus are self-pollinating, mm-hmm. but you can still lose those blooms.
You can. So during that critical bloom time, don't be out there, banging around on the tree, doing any pruning and things. You want to try to keep that bloom protected during that fruit set. Regarding frost protection, you just said, we do have some of our customers who ask us to come every year and protect some of their finer trees. We have some ficus trees in a very cold part of town that are just really susceptible to heavy frost damage every year. And we use a shade cloth that we put over the entire canopy of the tree. And we need to just drape it all the way to the ground. Allow a foot or two of additional material at the ground so you can put something to weight it down or stake it down so that you have a complete canopy over the top of the tree all the way to the soil surface. Then any moisture in the soil and any heat that's generated by the soil will be captured underneath the frost cloth, and your trees will be a lot better off. It'll actually can raise that temperature by 8 or 9 degrees inside that canopy, which may be all that you need to keep it, say the temperature's dropped to 25, well, you're going to be up in that 33, 34-degree range, and that could be all that you need to kind of keep those trees from getting hammered really bad. Then in the spring, we can take those shade cloths off and trim a little bit of the perimeter branches that it might have been frost-damaged a little bit, but you've got far less time to wait for those trees to recover. We're doing a lot of that frost protection right now. If customers want to call in this on Monday or even leave a message over the weekend, we're doing a lot of frost cloth installation in the next two weeks. So get on our list as soon as you can.
And as we were going to the bottom of the hour break, you had just gotten to your compost recipe. 50%
yes.
dead wood. 50% green wood or green matter. Do lawn clippings count? Ryegrass clippings?
Weeds, grass clippings, any of your kitchen scraps. Those are all constitute your green material. You want to go a little heavier. Sometimes the recipes go 2 to 3 times brown to the green. More brown, because if you get too much green in there, it can be pretty soupy. If you're starting to add water, it can get pretty funky. If it does start to get a little slimy or funky, just add some more brown. And that'll just lighten it up real quickly, and it'll it'd be a really nice, sweet compost when you're done.
So then application. One of the things that you see a lot and people, the trees planted too low or there's too much material put up around the trunk base, you don't want to put that. How do you apply your compost and not hurt yourself?
Well, you want to put it down over the root zone because it does condition the soil. It helps to really improve the soil quality, but you don't want it up against the trunk.
So the root zone is your tree canopy. So if you could take a plumb bob from the edge of your canopy down, that's where you want to put it?
It's what they call the drip line. Yeah, right. That's the drip line, is the outside, wherever the last leaves are growing outward. If you draw a line straight down to the soil, that's the drip line. So, you know, inside that drip line, but not next to the trunk. You want to, you know, allow, you know, an open area at least a foot or two away from the trunk of the trees to, for that trunk not to, the problem is any kind of compost or soil up against the trunk allows a pathway for water to be wicked up against the trunk tissue. The trunk tissue is very, very delicate. The root tissue is made for water. The trunk tissue is made for oxygen. You don't want that soil up against the trunk tissue because it wicks moisture up against that trunk tissue and can cause an environment where fungal pathogens can attack the trunk. So keep that compost away. We recommend an inch or two of compost is really all you need. Just so you don't see the soil below it, that's about all. I wouldn't put 3, 4, 6, 8 inches of soil. If you start putting 5, 6 inches of compost around the base of a tree and it has some fine texture, it will actually cap the oxygen to the root zone. It can suffocate the roots below. It won't be doing you good. It will be doing harm to the tree. So be sure you keep a light layer of compost. You can always put another inch or so on every year to kind of freshen up the compost. By the way, if there are those listeners who don't have compost or the ability to compost, but who would like some compost, we have some really nice quality compost. It's a heavier textured material, so it's not really, really fine like dirt. And we like it because it has a mixture of all sorts of sizes of material in it. And we apply that to a lot of our customers' trees, and we get it in bulk quantities so we can bring it in and distribute it. It's pretty inexpensive, and it's a great service for your trees.
So I understand we almost got to a pruning question, but we didn't quite get it answered.
I know, it's kind of a little tickler.
So pruning for this text message comes in, wants to know when's the best time to basically desert natives, your Palo Verdes and your ironwood. I think you could probably throw a mesquite in there. He didn't include those, but I think that's a...
You want to really back off on your pruning of any of your desert trees right now. You know, waiting until spring, until after a bud break is usually your best. You know, we try to do a little bit of light grooming right now. We are doing a little bit of trimming of olive trees right now, some light thinning to get them ready to be sprayed for olive for fruit suppressing the fruit development, which will come up in January and February. If you want to get good coverage for that spraying your olives, now's a good time to do a little bit of light thinning. But other than some olives, and of course all of your deciduous trees can be pruned right now. This is the ideal time between in December and January. We trim all of our elms, our ash, our pecans, our mulberries, pistache trees, your vitex, any of your trees that lose their leaves, this is the best time to prune them. And then, as I said, a few of the evergreens, like the olives, we'll do a little bit of light pruning on.
And you have a class coming up on pruning if somebody really wanted to learn firsthand.
We do. The Desert Botanical Garden has hosted a class I've taught for the last 8 years, and it's just a great class. I teach it about 6 or 7 times throughout the year. Our next class coming up is on January 16th, and you can go to the DBG website at dbg.org. dbg.org and find that class there. It's on pruning trees and shrubs. And yeah, looking forward to that. The had a really great response this last year to that class, and it fills up pretty quickly, so people should probably get on the list. It also will be offered a few more times in the spring. I think there's another class in March, and then several in late or early summer.
Now, I know your expertise is arborists and trees, but you do have a wide variety of knowledge as it relates to a lot of things, but especially outdoor living. And we've got Tian from Glendale, who's in a rental home, but desperately wants to start gardening again. And she wants to know if she can create a raised bed, approximately 4x8, over a lawn without damaging it. No.
I think it'd be pretty tough, yeah, because the weight of any kind of planting medium is going to be too much. You know, it'll compress the grass and pretty much destroy it. And then working around the raised garden is going to trample down the grass as well. I know that if you're limited in space, you may not be able to put a a raised bed that large on a patio or somewhere else. But you could start smaller, even getting some large containers. My wife and I have, with our busy schedules, have really done more container gardening than to have a raised bed. We have some raised beds in our plans, long-term plans, but right now we've just been, we have some herbs and spices. We've got some, you know, nice, some small vegetables that we grow in containers that we can move around. You know, they can keep them in the sun or out of the sun in the heat of the summer, moved out in the into the full sun during the fall months, and then, you know, back under the cover of our patio during the winter. And it's nice to be able to shuttle them around and have that flexibility. So that's another option for the listener, is to, you know, maybe go to something like a container gardening.
There's a lot of vertical wall gardenings that have been popularized.
Vertical walls are really cool because they're space savers. You can use any wall. There are some systems you can get online that essentially you put potted plants into slots, basically like a bookshelf. And then they grow outward. They grow out horizontally, and there's watering systems for them. And it's a real space saver, but you can get surprising a number of plants you can get in them.
And if you have a block wall, it breaks up that plain
really,
block look for you.
Sure, there's some architectural variety, you know, contribution as well. There's really a couple of cool ones at some local restaurants. At the, believe the Z Tejas there at 16th and Bethany has a couple of green walls inside the restaurant that are just way cool. I saw those when I was there just a week ago.
Now, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you during the week or needed an arborist on site or to talk to you and didn't get on today, y'all will be traveling this afternoon, how would somebody get a hold of Integrity Tree Service?
Well, the easiest way is to go to our website at itreeservice.com. That's the letter itreeservice.com. Or you can phone 602-788-0005. Be happy to help you any way we can.
We appreciate you spending your Saturday morning with us. Thank you. What's y'all's Christmas plans?
Oh, we're going to be hanging out with most of our family. Four of our five kids are coming into town, and with some of the two of our two granddaughters, and we are looking forward to hosting the whole family. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Do y'all have a favorite meal that y'all prepare or annual tradition?
What do y'all serve? We always have a nice turkey, and my daughter has said she's going to do the turkey this year, so we're excited about that.
Pick up this Saturday edition of the Arizona Republic for Rosie's Home Improvement column, where we cover the most important topics that every homeowner needs to know.